Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, so now, PCD, tell me, please, what was it? I mean, I remember when we met up and you were really enthusiastic about this show, Prosper, that came out, what, January 18 here in Australia? Yeah, I mean, I'll get you to tell the listeners what your background is that makes it relevant. But you know, I've got to say, we were a little bit apprehensive about the show because, you know, Australian dramas and, you know, that if you're not a neighbour's home and away kind of person that enjoys that kind of thing, it can, you know, it can rub you the wrong way. And yet, you're a bright chap. You seem to be really keen. Tell us, please, like, you know, a little bit about your background, but then, yeah, what you overall kind of grabbed you about this show.
Trouble at all, Tanya. Thank you very much. And thank you for having me back on Leaving Hillsong. It's great to be back.
Pleasure is all ours.
Thank you, my lady. So the regular listeners, of course, your regular listeners will know a bit about my story. But for the new listeners, as a young man at 16, I joined 16, I joined Hills Christian Life Centre then out in Castle Hill, just up the Windsor Road from Tony Packard's. And I was there for a number of years. I went off to Bible college. And as is often the case, studying the Bible is one of the best ways to lead you out of Christianity and to begin your deconstruction. And that was my story. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Okay. So, and since then, I've taken an active role in listening, in educating myself, watching, absorbing, and calling out some of the practices that we see in particularly fundamentalist Christian religions, and particularly here in Australia, because it's where I've resided for most of this century so far. And Prosper snuck up on me a little bit. So when I saw a billboard for Prosper, I immediately had a little bit of the Catherine Kim cultural cringe, and I was a little bit offensive, you mentioned. I thought this could go one way or the other.
Well, I mean, we have experienced, those of us who left, like, I think only two kinds of versions of reports, which are, you know, journalists have a go, but they don't really kind of get it as such. You know, they don't, you know, no matter how much time they spend there, they don't really seem to absorb it.
Yeah.
It's such a nuanced thing. Or you get people who do understand it all too well, but, you know, it's just so difficult to speak about for one reason or another. Or there's an inherent bias, obviously, present.
Absolutely. I feel for journalists, because when you're approaching a subject that like this particular version of God that our friends at Hillsong have, they, like, for a start, they've made it up from the beginning. We're dealing with a made-up concept. Then they make up their own version of the rules and, you know, put a bow around that and make it their very own. So it's a very idiosyncratic type of a thing, and that's hard for journalism to deal with. And when you come to an organisation that is going out of its way to deliberately obfuscate their finances, their internal disciplinary actions, their problems, their scandal, you know, all of this stuff, it's really difficult, especially for young journalists who tend to get thrown, you know, these, let's go see the whack job snake handlers up the road. You know, let's give the, you know, the sub, the editor will hand that one out to the, you know, the new one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I, you're right, I've been so excited about it, and I'll put aside, you know, being such a huge Rebecca Gidney fan, and of course, who doesn't love Rake? But I was so amazed at just how clever this is, and I've watched it 5 times now.
Five.
And each time I watch it, there's more stuff that comes out, and I'll talk to more people.
What is that about? Why are you revisiting this 5 times?
Well, I need to be careful. It's not like when you go and see, you know, it's like Star Wars, for example, that you see something new every time you see it, or whatever it is, you know, movie that does that for you. We all have a movie that we see something new. Hmm. It's a little bit that the way, and it's very, very clever. And mind you, I want to give all of your listeners a heads up. There are major spoilers. Tanya and I are going to be the... We're going to be letting cats out of the bag all over the place tonight, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Forward to what they've done.
I mean, it's been out now, so, you know, enough people will have a look around. And, you know, the question, the main question that's coming back, of course, is who's the leak, right? Like,
who's the leak?
Because, as you're saying, you know, there's some details, some finely woven in details in this thing that,
the way the scriptwriters have worked with whoever the leak was is really quite amazing. What I mean by that is, for example, to avoid, what they will do is rather than directly parody something that's happened or document something that's happened in a documentary type style within Hillsong, what they'll do is they'll parody a situation that brings you to the same points. So if you go into this series looking for, you know, oh, well, Brian didn't do this, or such and such didn't do that, or that's not the way this thing works, what it will do is, and I'll use one example, there's a storyline within the first episode that is not a direct parody of the direct event for a blah-blah-blah description of what happened when Brian got confused and wound up in the hotel room next door, and he actually thought the woman that was in there was in his hotel room and not the other way around. That's happened to all of us, right? But anyway, they don't do that. But what they do is they tell the story in such a way that you get to a point in that episode where Rebecca Gidney, who plays Abby, the wife of the senior pastor, is pointing her finger in his face and says, you were in
a hotel room.
You were in a woman hotel room after dark who was not your wife. So the point being that the story is, you know, not the same. People might feel a little disappointed by that, but then it brings the point. It's the same lesson. You're in a hotel room at night with a woman who was not your wife.
I want T-shirts. Do you know what I mean? It's fantastic.
I'll check out the merch shop afterwards. I think
we'll have to put in some kind of appeal to the actors to, because I mean, these leaps and bounds from, I've had journalists the whole way through my time being like, you know, we want to be balanced and we don't want to take pot shots at people's face because it's very pressure. No, that's not what's happening here. The gloves are off.
So you've got that particular mechanism that they use, which is great. And people that, if you haven't seen it, and it has been 4 weeks, which means all of our free trial subscriptions are about to expire, because the good people ban, you know, they do offer a 1 month trial. So, you know, if you want to have a look.
I don't know where people in the US can source it. I think it is on Starz in the UK. You know,
they use that methodology, and the other thing they do is what they do is they don't want to get sued, so they don't tell the story directly, but they give you the points. So they use that plot mechanism of telling the story opaquely but nailing home that point a woman who was not your wife. The other thing that they've done, and they do that repeatedly, it's really good. The other thing that they've done quite clearly is, as you watch it, you can tell that the person who is the leak, whoever they are, has used this as a vehicle to literally to poke at the Houstons as they sit and watch it themselves. It's sending messages that are so on the inside. And again, a little bit, but the details are included in this documentary, in this series. That you think, well, why would they include that detail? There's no narrative, doesn't carry the narrative forward, doesn't fight forward, there's no plot mechanism. I mean, not a plot mechanism, a plot mechanism. It really has no reason for building there. And my take on it is that it's a way of the person who has leads, scriptwriter, to send a very clear and a very personal message, and often, you know, often personal messages are in a very public way. So it's a...
And it sure beats Twitter at 2 a.m. on the Scotch, which is as nasty as it got. Now, please bear in mind, we know all the leaks. Like, I know the leaks that, you know, ask them, are you the leak? There's a fair bit of shock because it is a very personal
series.
There's a lot of, you know, really personal storylines, and we'll go through them and give a tick or a cross or whatever, but without revealing too much. But
it does make me wonder, Tanya, if maybe the leak is a bit of a collaborative effort.
That's interesting. Okay.
At the table of the Last Supper, for example, right, there were 12 people sitting there. It was a collaborative effort. So, you know, maybe the leak is a bit of a collaborative effort, because it does span personal detail, business details, and family details that are so intimate.
Yeah. I mean, some of them have taken me years to kind of dig out or be told, and, you know.
And a lot of them just have never been public knowledge before.
They've... So
now, again, I've always
somebody. It's or as you're saying, you know, maybe an entire board of people are directing it. Who knows?
And so, if I could sum up the two things into one, I'd say we know as human beings that things that are done in private and expect to remain in private. The business is conducted, we conduct ourselves differently. Things are done differently when people believe that they will always be done in secret. And, you know, so it is a good thing. It is always good thing when these types of details come out and we actually get to see what is at the heart of people, what kind of people they are, which is a question we've been asking ourselves for a long time. What kind of people are these, you know, that they...
And there's all kinds of details that are said. I mean, as an aside, there was a letter that the HR guy that had been there for 35 years, a guy called John Mays, had written basically when Brian came out with his, like, I forgot my key and I didn't know something, you know, that stuff.
I thought I was in my room.
And this guy, John Mays, who you've probably not heard of because he's a low-key kind of HR kind of guy, apart from his being the father of Jason Mays, who's a little bit more famous, but we'll... But now, so John Mays had written this letter in just saying, this is, you know, this is garbage, this excuse that you gave. He said... Brian Houston considered himself beyond disciplinary boundaries and defied them without further recourse from those responsible for his discipline. He said, employees of the church were asked to believe insulting dribble put out by the board to explain Houston's alleged visit to a woman's room at a conference in 2019. Now, my understanding is that John Mays had written that to 3 people.
Wow.
And it leaked to The Guardian by one of those people. Do I wonder if they're the same leak?
I almost understand what went through the minds of the people on the board by issuing this insulting drivel. Because let's face it, they would have a reasonable expectation that the congregation would be immune to insulting drivel, or at least those that attended Brian Sunday morning.
Look forward to it, really, on a weekly.
Drivel. It was not in short supply on a Sunday morning at Hillsong, and it seems, anywhere else.
But we digress.
We digress.
Congratulations
there.
The leak.
Yes.
Because leaks claim not to know who the leaks are amongst each other. All right, do you want to give us a bit of background for Prosper, where, Prosper is set in the inner sanctum?
Absolutely. It boils down to the one decision maker, which, of course, is Cal, who is the senior pastor. And every decision Cal makes is to protect the church above the individual, which, again, thinking about that narrative ploy or narrative method I spoke about at the beginning, it's a brilliant way of pointing out a lot of the things that went at Hillsong. Everything was to put institution above the individual. So in a nutshell, Tanya, this TV series, which is streaming on Stan, as we mentioned, covers 8 episodes, and it sets in modern-day Sydney, and it details the family life of the Quinn family. It goes into their inner sanctum, the Quinns being Cal Quinn and Abby Quinn. They are the senior pastors of New Star Church, which they started here in Sydney. And it's set in the contemporary modern day. It puts a spotlight and really turns up the volume on the incredible wealth that these people have, something that comes across quite clearly. The dysfunction within the family, those issues are part of the narrative, very deliberate part of the narrative, and articulated quite deliberately. It also touches on the issues, what has transpired within that family and the results and the impacts of their own actions, and what the gap between that thinking and the gospel, the common understanding of the gospel is.
You mean the hypocrisy of the Houstons?
The hypocrisy of the Houstons.
So, I mean, just jumping back to that wealth before we just step aside. I mean, we spoke about before we were recording, like having to actually look at the magnificent home on the beach that was their family home in this show is so very different to, the Houstons have got 2 apartments on Bondi Beach worth $2 million. You read it in the paper, read the news paper. But to actually watch them live and socialise and entertain and do that kind of stuff is very different.
Quality, hats off to the production quality of it. It does show you all this. It focuses on the places that they live, like you said, not just the outside, but the inside. It focuses very deliberately on the clothes that they wear. If you look, you can see that the great attention has been given to what the characters are wearing, what the protagonists are wearing. And a couple of characters that go through a character arc during the series, you watch their clothes change, but also down to the cars that they drive. Like, I mean, I knew you get a maybe a flash of the Bentley badge on the front of Pastor.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cal's car. But you know that he drives a 2-door Bentley Sports, and that's worth, that's very well done.
I'm told that the lineup of those black cars at the beginning, I'm not good with cars, all lined up right at the start of the show is a direct comment as well. Mm.
Another thing it does really well is it highlights, as I said, the incredible sibling rivalry between the two natural born sons and the natural born daughter and their spouses. Right. So the wife, the daughter has a husband, and the husband of the daughter and the firstborn son, the most incredible sibling rivalry. They are it's almost like trying to figure out how to get 10 minutes with Cal when the other one's stuck behind the barbecue or stuck talking to a parishioner or running with it's amazing. They're constant the machinations, Machiavellian machinations behind the scenes there are really well done. And of course it everything in this family centered around, as I said, the preservation of the institution. But it's set at a time when the church is expanding into the American market, which of course is the largest evangelical market in the entire world, doesn't it? And it's a real eye-opener. It's razor sharp in terms of the way it brings all together and makes its points.
Okay. Sorry.
So yeah, it's really, really well done. Prosper, it brings into razor sharp focus just this very, very damaged family and how mucked up they are.
To give credits, it was created by Matt Cameron and Jason Stevens, developed with the support of Stan Lionsgate, Screen Australia, Screen New South Wales. Prosper is written by Matt Cameron, Liz Duran, Louise Fox and Belinda Chaco. The series is directed by Jennifer Leakey and Sean Wilson.
We should throw a dinner party for those people. Well, and I would love to hear that. Maybe we could have an open mic at that in the flowers or something. I would love to hear the conversation.
Send an email. If, we've got to be some of the finer connoisseurs of this material. And
yeah, I agree.
I think it's difficult to take on if you haven't had some kind of introduction another way, but we'll find out, I guess. Now, you were saying there was an array of media responses. There's, I'm guessing, quite different ones between Christian ones and secular.
Yeah.
Publications. What'd you find?
Definitely. I do apologize. I don't have my sources. It is a mixed reaction. You're getting the reaction you would expect from parts of, let's call it, the Christian media. That what I mean by that is those that have an anti, because you love or you hate the Hillsong movement, right? Even within the Christian church. So those that were, those that don't like, if you like, saw what it was from the beginning, or for whatever reason, have never been Hillsong supporters, right? Have never been said good things. They've been very happy with the production and loved it. And those, of course, the song's been remarkably quiet itself. But, those allied organizations have been, while somewhat subdued, have been critical of it. The professional media industry is nothing but good things to say about it. Of course, there's a couple of people in there that would say, and I'd agree with them, that I think that Richard Roxburgh is an amazing actor. But wait till you see him live on stage, right? Because once you've seen Richard live on stage.
Where's he live on stage? Sorry.
When you see him live, when you see him doing Shakespearean theatre, for
example. Oh, okay. So he's a Shakespeare. I see what you're saying. Oh, right.
Such a presence. But that's it. So it's been well received. It has been well received.
Well, I hope it gets up. Because, I don't know. I really didn't take to Righteous Gemstones. Others did. I found it a little bit over the top, except that they did have a plot line where cash was found in the wall. And then that turned out to be, true in Joel Osteen's church. They found 600 grand in the wall or something. So, who knows?
Enough to make you want to take your wallpaper down. But, it does a good job. It brings together compelling characters, though the intricate themes, strong performances from everybody right across the entire cast. So it's really good. It is good. It's a standalone show with everything else aside.
When you say a standalone show, you mean for people who've prior had no interest or knowledge of mega churches? And we probably should throw in there that I think the creators have not stated this is about Hillsong. It's just that it's you could say it's so apparent, even even the use of the name Quinn, I mean, one of the remaining pastors there, Donna Crouch, who's married to the chairman of the board, Dr. Yeah. Stephen Crouch, who's a doctor. He's got a doctorate. He's the chair of the board. You know, her name was Donna Quinn. So out of all the names they chose that. And look, when you Google it, is Prosper about Hillsong? You know, it pretty much comes up as yes. So we are that.
I used to sweep up after Sunday morning service with Donna every now and then. Yes. Did she marry a medical doctor? No,
she married her. He's got a doctorate of accountancy, which, you know, has all kinds of implications and questions for the finances of Hillsong. But tell people who don't know, or, you know, can people recommend this to friends who don't know about churches, or is it just a hate fest on Hillsong PCD?
No, I'd say it's a standalone, and it stands on its own two legs. Solid script writing, believable characters, great character arcs. Across the series, it builds in intensity, and it builds in the way that it sends its messages to you. And then by the end, you feel like you're in a tornado. It's really, really well. So you could go along and watch it and not know a damn thing. And think, you know, that's really interesting. But of course, those of us in the know, you know, that's good television. They think, oh, that's great television. I enjoyed that, or they didn't enjoy it. It stands on its own 2 feet. But for those of us in the know, that have a little bit of knowledge as to some of the shenanigans that have gone on over the years, then, you know, it's got that that bit of extra, you know, hook in the mouth, so to speak. Yeah, it got me hooked.
Yeah, I must say I'm a little bit surprised as to how hooked you got, but that's fantastic. Let's have a quick look at the characters before we dive into the episodes. And, you know, we can't go over each one of them. We won't go over each one of them too thoroughly, but they are each so very poignant and interesting. And, again, look, it's not like Hillsong is the only Pentecostal or charismatic mega church to have scandals like this. You know, they're far too common. I'm sure, you know, there's many churches that people might be saying, actually, that's my church, thanks. But
exactly. You
know, an Australian production with
such a variety of, you couldn't even get them all. Well, you couldn't put them in an APAR miniseries. Just ask Jimmy Swaggart. But,
it's kind of like, and if all the sins of the megachurch pastors were written down, they could not be held in all the books of the rest of the world. Remember the good deeds of Jesus?
Yeah, let's do the characters.
I mean, there had been comparisons to Succession from HBO.
I think there's comparisons as well.
But yeah,
it's the same story in one sense, right? There's a family that whose values become skewed, and people do outrageous, unethical things because they place an institution above individuals. So it's the same story. So yeah, I think that's a good comparison.
Well, they do it because they can, I guess. All right. So just briefly, as you mentioned before, the senior pastor is called Cal Quinn. He's played by Richard Roxburgh, who you mentioned as well, played a character called Rake, who was based on a very high-profile barrister in Australia called Charles Waterstreet, a brilliant, brilliant man. Interesting
man.
Yeah. And colourful, let's say that. His wife in the show is called Abby. She's played by Rebecca Gibney. Now, was she a country practice?
She was a country practice. Yeah. And I think the word is the immortal Rebecca Gibney. But that's a show my bias in. Yeah,
she's a well-loved, well-known Australian actress from a soap opera from a long, long time ago.
This is the best I've seen her.
And the looks on her face, like those real fake Bobby looks that she gives, her smiles and stuff, it's just fantastic. Evita-esque, that was. Now, Eli.
Oh, yeah.
Eli. I mean, they've even got, and I found this a little bit on the offensive perhaps, because the general manager guy, the financial controller, has this funny accent. The Hillsong business manager has a difficult to pronounce name if you don't know it. So it all seems...
Well, you know, and Eli also interestingly owns the local church associated business, which is a coffee shop, which features as part of it. But, absolutely. Which the coffee is famously bad in the TV land, but which I found interesting. But yeah, that's Eli, who's the church administrator, and does seem to have his fingers on in every pie, doesn't he?
And at the end, doesn't he come out as quite the shiny good guy?
Absolutely.
Makes me wonder if
The thought crossed my mind as well, Tony.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so their kids are Dion, played by Ewan Leslie. Taz Quinn is the wife of Dion, played by Ming Shu He. Issy Kalani is the only daughter of this couple, played by Hayley McCarthy. Benji Kalani is her husband, an American husband. And you know what? The Houstons only have one daughter, and she married somebody who wasn't Australian-born Aussie, Caucasian.
He's from New Zealand, but he plays an American and does play Benji. And he's a little bit handsome, I noted, but that's all I'll say about that.
You know, he's married to Peter Tognavalu. He's Fiji, and I think he was the apple of Brian's eye initially. Yeah. Looks like such a football player.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I mean, it may be coincidence. Jed is the youngest son, played by Jacob Collins Levi.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Moses is there. So there's four kids in this family, and Moses is youngest and is the adopted child. Again, you know, I don't think we can overlook race. It's definitely an issue and a class issue in Hillsong. And who gets awarded what roles, what jobs, what kind of status. So, you know, Moses is also not Caucasian and he's adopted. So there's a lot of othering going on there. And then, I mean, look, I'm just sorry, looking at this list here. How would you describe DJ Maddox? That's not like anything.
Yeah, and again, when you think back to that, when I talked about the narrative mechanism that they use by having a parodying certain situations, DJ Maddox, DJ is an American character, and he is substance abusing to the groove type character in his early 20s. And, you know, let's just say it, he's very Bieber-esque, but not. So anyway, he plays a very interesting role throughout the miniseries, and from the church point of view, he uses the church in the same way the church uses him. When we do the episode review, which is coming up later, I'll go more into that.
Fantastic. Yeah, perfect. Okay, now, interesting and bold is this next character, Rosa, who, you know, is this troubled middle-aged woman whose story unfolds as the show progresses. I really hope there's a season two. You know, it sort of places a character behind the woman who's in the hotel room, who's not Cal's wife, but we'll get to that. She's a big donor to the church, played by Bridget Sangali. Very, very fine performances. And just, before we jump into the episodes, the other character, the final one we'll look at is Juno, who is Rosa's daughter, who's becomes more and more involved with people from the church, I guess, as the story unfolds. Then there's the federal politician. Tell me.
So this is an interesting one, because anybody who cares about Hillsong and follows it, it's about a gentleman named Scott Morrison. Now, there is a federal politician that actually appears in the miniseries, and he appeared in every single episode. But those that are looking for a direct Scott Morrison model, or, you know, some sort of Not the same. This character, a bit like Juno, actually, is mainly there, like very prominent in every episode, but mainly there to, you know, to carry the plot forward and to ensure that some of the issues, make sure the issues, you know, land where they need to be. So not belittling those characters, but it's definitely not Scott Morrison. More of a, you know, more there to carry the plot forward, but very interesting. So the existential crisis is this, and of course the last character in it is of course the church itself, Eustar, because it's in a very big way it is a character in itself. Existential crisis is that the federal government is passing legislation to crack down on tax exemption for those institutions that are taking advantage of those tax exemptions, not doing the right.
Clearly a wish and a prayer from the creators. I mean, this is so current, so right now in Australia. It's awesome. Like, huge round of applause there.
I also saw Shadows of the Leaker in that. You know,
the whistleblower, you mean, from documents dropped in
Shadows of the Whistleblower, exemptions and falsifying records, and it's going out of its way. Like, I saw Shadows of the Whistleblower. But, I mean, again, that's just, you know, we humans love recognising patterns and taking guesses, right?
Oh.
So we came up, we got...
I mean, this is some thinly veiled stuff at times, let's be honest. And, I mean, some of the lines seem to have come directly out of people's mouths that, you know, such private conversations. All right, let's begin